In this episode, we take a look at the reporting that plastics are being detected in people's brains. And later on, we react to the idea that lied to kids become lying, ill-adjusted adults, as seen in some recent study. Hello, welcome to the Call Like I See It podcast. I'm James Keys, and joining me today is a man who brings the heat to every show. Show enough. Tunde Ogonlana. Tunde, you ready to give us a piece of your mind?
Of course, man. Let's do it.
All right. Now, before we get started, if you enjoy the show, I ask that you subscribe and like the show on YouTube or your podcast platform. Doing so really helps the show out. And we're recording on November 25th, 2025. And I'm going to jump right in, Tunde. We recently saw reporting that scientists have detected microplastics, nanoplastics in people's brain. And this is like, you know, causing inflammation, you know, like, as you would imagine, creating problems. So what do you make? What's going on here? Like, why do we have plastic in our brain? And what's your reaction to seeing this?
Well, my reaction is the same as all these headlines, are just more anxiety. And it's going to make me do things to put more plastic in my brain.
Oh, my God.
Go smoke more weed, and I'm sure there's plastic bits in the joint paper. But
I doubt that that's the reason for this. You know, because what they're talking about is like what you inhale. You know, you open up a package or something like that.
I'm just saying that, you know, I think about all of it. That, you know, there's the plastic in a lot more things than I think we realize.
It seems to be it's everywhere. Like that seems to be
That's my point.
Yeah. Including everywhere in us.
Yeah. And so, and look, it's on a serious note. I mean, we did a story, I think probably 2 years ago, a discussion about plastic stones and how, a reality that this isn't a joke, you know, for people listening, that the earth has already regurgitated enough plastic, through the volcanic process and especially in the oceans, that, there's a new, classification, a geological classification called a plastic stone, which is when plastic and the molecules that form plastic and the molecules that form rocks actually fuse together when the earth is regurgitating material through the volcanic process. So, you know, if the geology of the earth can be changed, because of plastic, then it shouldn't be a surprise that our own biology internally, and those with other animals too, because it's not just us, will also show signs of changing along with the amount of plastic, the abundance of plastics in the world. So it's another example that we are our environment, and some of us understand that and some of us don't. I mean, that's...
Well, I think even people, a lot of times people don't want to deal with it, and so they make themselves not understand it, you know, because it's not a difficult concept to grasp, but... A lot of times, remember, if you don't want to do something about something, or if something feels overwhelming or too big of a problem to deal with, a lot of times the natural reaction in your brain is to deny the existence of the problem. So we deal with that. We deal with a lot of reasons why we face a lot of resistance to the idea. Like there's people with a profit motive that are going to resist the idea of trying to be a little bit cleaner in the environment. Maybe not just for altruistic reasons, but because whatever's in the environment tends to make its way into us. And, you know, there's profit motive reasons. There's just psychological reasons of the enormity of the problem. And then there's plenty of people that see that and be like, hey, yeah, we should do something about it. Let's try to do something about it. To me, my reaction is like, yes, the plastic stones, as we talked about a few years back, that was, you know, we can see, okay, yeah, something plastic is in a volcano, or it's in, you know, it's in some place with a lot of pressure, and then it gets fused into something else. That's kind of a benign thing, though. It's kind of like, oh, yeah, wow, plastic's everywhere kind of thing. That it's being incorporated into our bodies, I think that's like jarring to me. And the biggest concern I have from that is that it's being incorporated into our bodies in place of actual living cells. Like, wherever that plastic is, that's not a new piece. That's not like, oh, I got an extra arm made of plastic. It's like, no, I used to have brain there. Now I have plastic, and guess what? The plastic doesn't do the thinking. So it's like, well, we're replacing our parts of our bodies, small parts at this point, but I don't know that there's some upper limit here other than when it just kills us. But small parts of our body that work, that do stuff, they're being replaced with plastics by our body. Just this stuff's in there. And apparently, I guess the body's not able to push it out efficiently, or so much of it goes in that it can't push out enough of it. So it's just sticking it in places. And apparently our brain is one of these places. So, I mean, to me, the bigger, the other shoe is the one that I'm looking at. Well, hold up. What about the stuff that used to be there where the plastic is now? And what happens when enough of someone's brain gets replaced by plastic? You know, maybe they just sit around and doom scroll all the time. Like, and they wouldn't be able to want to do anything else besides that.
Well, I don't think we need plastic for that. That one's already, you know, that ship.
Oh, man, that was not because of the plastics. Hey, so for all you know, it could be because of the plastics.
Yeah, no, I get the feeling that it would have happened anyway. I definitely think they're separate, but they're both problems for humanity. So here's the interesting thing, though, because there's a few other things to unpack, because it's not just maybe what it's replacing. It's the fact that it is causing the same harm as other things, but some of the other things are things that we can deal with in terms of how we eat and all that. So an example would be, you know, last year I had, I keep saying I had my first heart attack, and then I hear myself saying, I want that to be the only one.
It does imply that you'll have a second at some point, the way you talk about it. So.
Yeah. And part of it is, you know, learning that I've got advanced artery disease, and it's hereditary. And so I have, at my age, I have way more plaques on my arteries than I probably should. And a lot of that is caused by my liver producing excess cholesterol. And so but that's something that I can deal with by changing my diet, not drinking alcohol, you know, certain things like that, so that my liver behaves differently. So what this plastic, microplastics, runs the risk of doing is similar to what the plaques are doing to me now, which is they can clog arteries, capillaries, sensitive areas, like how diabetics can lose vision because of the sensitive nerve endings in the eyes that can get affected by too much sugar in the blood. That's what could happen with plastics, microplastics. But that's what I'm saying, is that at least with the artery disease and all that, from a hereditary, or even if someone eats their way into having plaques, that's something that we can still deal with. Like I said, I can adjust my diet, certain things. It's hard for me in our society to deal with getting away from plastic. I mean, it's funny as I say that. I got a plastic water bottle. My phone is pretty much made of plastic. I got a microphone that I'm talking into that's got a bunch of plastic around it. The computer screen is made of plastic. Like, there's literally plastic everywhere. And then the biggest one, as you mentioned earlier, is our clothes. Because most of us don't have natural fibers 100%. Even,
hey man, I'm not going to stand by and let you disparage those clothes, man. That's a really nice shirt you have on.
For the audio audience, I can feel it's got a plastic coating.
Yeah, it has a plastic coating, but that plastic coating says "Call It Like I See It" for the audio audience. That shirt has "Call It Like I See It" on it.
Yeah. So that's kind of my point, James, is saying that, and that's what I'm saying, is that like I realize with the way that we can get unhealthy and have these issues from a nutrition or a lifestyle standpoint. At least some people don't want to adjust, but those people that do want to adjust have the ability to clean that up. And with the plastics, because it's just permeated our environment so much, we don't have choices now. We're all susceptible to damage from this. And I'll finish with this and hand it back, because I just did my blood work last week. It's just interesting timing for us having this discussion. I did my annual checkup around this time every year. And so they sent me to Quest Diagnostics to, you know, get my blood work done. So I had heard about this, so I asked the nurse. And she have confirmed it. And what I heard was, you can ask now these labs, they can test how many microplastics you have per whatever in your blood, per you know, millimeter or whatever, you know,
whatever
measurement. And they have, and they have measurements already, whether you have a high amount of microplastics, a middle amount, or a low amount. Like, they already have figured out what that looks like. So just saying that
there's there's no zero amount.
I guess not. Yeah, it's just high, medium, or low. So there's no zero. Yeah, which is interesting. So I asked her and I said, hey, can I get that test? I want to, you know this. And it was funny. She just goes, yeah, I can't. we can't do it on this one because your doctor only ordered this, this. So I said, I got to ask my GP then to put that on specifically. She goes, yeah, and then we can do it. So I go, okay. So I figure next time I go to him, I'm going to tell him, I want to learn how much microplastics I have. Can you tell Quest and I go pay for it? So yeah. It's like, that's the thing, James, that I realize is this is so prevalent that the like medical community already has a way to study this in us. And to your point, there's no level zero.
Yeah.
Just, well, you know what I mean?
A lot of this, though, see, now there's a couple of things going on. You know, like there's maybe people might not be aware of this, but there's something that our body has called the blood-brain barrier. And only certain things can, like, so everything that's circulating in your blood can't get to the brain. There's a barrier there that your body, like, for good reason, because the brain is a very important part of our body, obviously. And so your body's very careful about what it lets in there. So not just this observation, this detection of plastics in the brain actually exceeds the warning level of just it in your blood or in parts of your body, because that means not only are they getting in, but they're getting through this blood-brain barrier as well, which is a higher level of alarm, particularly because, as you pointed out, like the plastics aren't getting there. Now, I'm worried about the functionality that you may be losing, but in addition to that, what it also does is creates inflammation. It creates this inflammation. We've learned a lot in society over the past couple of decades as far as how inflammation, particularly chronic inflammation, not inflammation because I got hit in the arm and then I have some inflammation in my arm that's localized and temporary, and then that inflammation helps with the healing process, and then I'm good, you know, in a day or two. But in chronic inflammation, where your body just stays inflamed, and that could be because of diet, that could be because of a lot of different things that you're doing that is keeping your body in this higher inflammation state, which causes a lot of chronic disease, you know, ultimately. But what this plastic is doing is also creating chronic inflammation. And the biggest issue I see with that is that the plastic doesn't, like, the plastic lives longer than us, so to speak. Like, plastic's going to be around millions of years. We won't. So this plastics that's going in there, unless there's some countermeasure that's determined to get your body to be able to excrete it, then to get it out, then it's just whatever comes in is staying in. Like, it's just, if it's getting acclimated into your brain, which is the one I'm concerned about the most, but if it's getting acclimated into other things, then it's going to be there for the rest of your life. And it's just going to continue to accumulate more and more and more. So, I mean, we're entering a new kind of phase in this humanity thing. Like, everybody was like, oh yeah, we're gonna have bionic this and bionic that. Like, man, your body's replacing stuff on the inside already, and you know, you're gonna have a bionic brain that doesn't work, you know. It'd be my concern.
Well, it's sobering, but, yeah, too, because they find plastics in placentas.
Yeah,
you know, like, that's what I'm saying, like, this is
another very sensitive area that your body tries to keep, you know, tries to keep very, very clean, you know, does an extra effort.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying is that it's, I was going to think, I'm saying as a joke as you're talking, but it's not really funny. Like, I was thinking, like, I'm glad I'm going to die in like 30 years. Seriously, like.
Jeez, man.
Because this, no, it's kind of a joke, but it's not.
Yeah, I was saying, no, but it's not a good joke.
On a serious note, yeah, because I'm not one of these people that's trying to live for 500 years, right? I'm 47, so I figure by the time I get to around 80, I'm good. And so that's 33 years from now. So my point is just saying that's what I'm saying is, honestly, it's sad, but I think about my kids, future grandkids, like, and you think about, okay, in future generations, they're going to look back at us and our parents and our grandparents, let's say the people starting from, let's say, the middle of the 20th century, and think, what the hell was wrong with you guys? Because this topic, as we're talking, reminds me a bit of the climate change conversation, even though I know it's different. But what I mean, the similarity is that this is something that's slow, that's not easy to see, and it requires a little bit of additional knowledge about things like science, right? Like, how, you know, from molecules to things like you're saying about being able to permeate the brain casing, the membrane around the brain, or like you said, that the placenta also, the body has much more protection in those parts of the body because of the sensitivity of it, the reproduction, all that. Well, you're a well-educated guy that has gotten that knowledge over years. A lot of people, you know, people don't know this stuff. It's hard to tell them and get them to understand the risks of microplastics. Just like if people don't understand the idea of like a greenhouse and greenhouse gas effect and all that, and the idea of warming, they can easily be led to believe that, yeah, well, we had an ice age, the climate changes all the time. What does it matter now? And not understand the input of fossil fuels and trapping heat inside the atmosphere.
And also, so we didn't have 8 million people in the last ice age either. You know, like that.
Yeah, exactly.
Again, the Earth is driving, not saying cars, the Earth is going to get lost. So, we're saying that we are going to lose our habitat.
Yeah, but that's my point, James, is that that takes a little bit more nuance and people having coming to the table with already a set of information that they can build on. And I think reminds me of it.
Well, hold on. It takes that or it takes a level of trust, you know, or people who are willing to build trust and other people who aren't trying to undermine that trust for profit reasons and so forth. Because everybody's not going to understand all that stuff. But there's a lot of things that people don't understand that they then go along with. Like the medical community does a lot with birth, you know, with birthing kids. And people don't understand all the stuff that the doctor's telling them and helping them out with this and that. And we don't need doctors to give birth. You know, like people survived before there were doctors, you know, like granted, we had much higher mortality, you know, with birth. Yeah. But
you had to have eight kids to have three survive back then.
Yeah, yeah. But there was a lot that happened beforehand, but there's a lot of trust involved with people talking to doctors as far as the birthing process. So there needs to be, you don't have to understand it all, but there has to be a level of trust. We just don't have that right now. Trust is hard to come by, you know, in a society with as much information coming from places. But I know we want to wrap this topic. So, you know,
Let me finish on this as you relate to trust. That's very interesting. This is another thing that just happened recently, which this is a good timely conversation for. I had a lunch at a restaurant just like 2 weeks ago, and they had a paper straw. And it was the first time I've been to a place with a paper straw in a very long time. And I just started thinking, look at how this one little issue, the paper straw, made its way all the way up to a legislation in Congress, right, this year. And it shows how, like you said about trust, that's the issue I think we have here too, is that there's a lack of trust in messengers and we have a fractured information system. And so I'll finish with this. The ability for us to deal with this, I think, is just not... We're not going to deal with it as a society.
It's been compromised. It's been compromised.
Yeah,
but trust can be rebuilt. You know, trust can be rebuilt. Yeah, because
I think it'll be too late. That's my glass half empty. But that's what I'm saying. Just having this plastic straw, and it got a little bit wet, and I thought to myself, think about how angry people got about just this symbolism, and it's just like that was just trying to do one little thing, just to say
let's make things a little better.
Yeah, and so that's all. That's why I just wanted to share that it just was kind of so.
Well, some of that goes into the idea that's fostered that we're not all in this together, you know, and so that's something that. Perhaps as you've talked about on past shows, you know, when you get to a certain point in Maslow's hierarchy and you don't really recognize it, that something like the straw becomes something that's animating to you. And it's like, I'm so angry about this straw. And it's like, yeah, it's because all this other stuff that is much more important than that has been taken care of for you. Not really due to much effort on your part, you know, but you feel like, you know, you feel like you hit a triple, but you've just been born in a society that has you on third base.
Yeah.
So
maybe if we had a mortality rates at birth, like we used to have 1,000 years ago,
then people would appreciate things a little bit more. I mean, and I'm not saying we need to go back to that, but what I'm saying is that some of that may just be because of all the successes. People had a lot more trust in science, you know, you go back 70 years, you know, so forth. So 70, 60, 80, you know, whatever, like in that time period, a lot more trust. That's been deteriorating as, you know, you can say it's an inverse relationship to how many sources of information that people are consuming, which, you know, and I'm not again saying you need to restrict sources of information. I'm just observing that's what's happening. But to me, whether this can get better, it's a question of timing, as you pointed out, whether this can improve in a certain amount of time. But also, it's just going to be, I don't think we should look at this and say, okay, we got to be back to where we were then or at a certain time, because that's just not the way things work. It's going to be different in the future. And so all we can try to do, we can't try to change like, oh, okay, look back past few generations have really just dropped the ball, became so selfish, so greedy that could not do anything from a collective standpoint, from a human collective standpoint, you know, like, you go back to the 80s, they got rid of the CFCs and they're able to close the hole in the ozone. After that, we've been very scammed. You know, it's been very scant on what we've been able to do collectively to help the world out. But, you know, these generations aren't going to be around forever. And so maybe the next generations may be a little bit more in tune with being able to work together to address problems. Maybe not. But the future is not going to be the past. The question is the decisions that are made today and in the future, how they direct the future. And I'm not pessimistic. I'm not optimistic. I'm hopeful though. Now I'm hopeful that the people that would observe how the past few generations have gone astray, down greed, down selfishness, can learn from that and then do better, basically, would be my hope. So we're going to wrap this
part. That's nice. I'll finish and say I'm pessimistic and I think the system's going to collapse.
No, you've made that very clear, sir.
And we're going to be hunter-gatherers in about 500 years or less. Okay. So that'll be it. So I'm glad. That's why I said I'm glad I'm dying in roughly 30 to 40.
So I'm going to wrap this section. We'll have a part two of this as well, also talking about something that is, you know, along these lines as far as our health and our bodies and so forth and our minds. So join us for that and we'll talk to you soon. All right, Tunde, for our next part of today's discussion, I wanted to take us to, we saw this recent study that followed. Now, it wasn't some, this is hundreds of people that were studied. This isn't some huge, huge study, but it's statistically significant. And what it did is through questionnaires, it asked a bunch of people their recollections of being lied to by their parents when they were young, and then also kind of, you know, personality and, you know, like how they act and interact as adults, you know. And so it's taking both this information, self-reported information from their past, and then self-reported information about how they navigate through the world now. And the correlation that was made, that the more the kids were lied to, or at least being lied to as kids, and this is about like, oh, okay, well, why can't I have this toy, or why can't we go here for dinner, or, you know, just kind of the lies of that parents may tell a kid just to not have to give a full answer to something or a complicated answer or anything like that. But kids that recall being lied to more when they were kids, or people who recall being lied to more when they were kids, tend to lie more as adults and have difficulties in terms of, you know, the term they use was ill-adjusted. You know, so Tunde, what do you make of this study? And I want to ask you both generally, but then also from your own life experience. You've been a kid and you've also been a parent, and then you have children who, you have some grown kid children, and you have, you know, kid that's still a teenager. So you have a wide spectrum of experience here. So both generally and in your own, you know, and we'll get through this over the course of the show, but your reaction to this.
Thanks for acknowledging that I was once a child myself.
Yes, yes. Just to make it clear, man.
My kids seem to think that I just showed up like this on the earth. That I was
as kids
younger.
Tend to do.
Yeah, I know. they looked at my mom and said, "Grandma, he just had him like this." it's a very interesting topic because it makes me realize that this is, I think, part of the foundation of what makes a lot of us in society and humanity just different types of people, and why we probably project on how we are in these ways onto others, and we don't understand sometimes how other people aren't like us. So, and what I mean by that is, because you make a good point, I think it's important to distinct. We're not talking about lies, because obviously the term lie is just saying telling an untruth. So, you know, telling a lie to your five-year-old that, you know, there's a monster under the bed if they don't go to sleep or something. And I'm just making something up here. I mean, I think that's a different type of thing than what we're talking about, like chronically lying and maybe presenting one face as a parent, and then it to in one way in public, and then your child is watching you act a totally different way in private. Or
well,
certain
part of
things
it, though.
Like
but
that.
Remember, they were talking about how threats to, like, hey, if you don't listen to me and come now, I'm going to leave you here. Those type of threats that are based on, now maybe the parent wasn't lying, but yes, what they observe you in your behavior, but then also lying to the child, not just how they interact with you in general. So the study
well,
did
I
it
think
on both.
That's important, James, because that's how kids learn how to interact with other people, right? Like, so it's an interesting point you make. What if the parent said, "I'm going to leave you here"? And there's two things. Like, I'm the type of parent that if I say that, I'm leaving my kid because of that, right? Like, on a serious note.
Yeah. You don't want
to realize that. Like, my kid has to trust that I'm serious. Like, and that's why also I didn't make threats like that on a consistent basis, because I didn't want to have a punitive relationship at all times with my kids. But there's other people whose parents will make all these threats and all this. If the parents don't carry through the threat, then that person grows up with a different way of thinking about, you know, I guess.
How do you get somebody to do what you want them to do? You threaten them with something, and then that's how, and which, so you raise
them,
teach them to be more manipulative.
Yeah, because my, and that's a good point. Maybe that's the type of thing I was looking for. So I'm not a manipulative person. And I think one of the reasons is because of how I was raised. It's kind of the way I just said I raised my kids is, you know, my mom didn't, you know, my mom said something, she carried it through. And if she didn't want to threaten me or anything, she didn't say it. So it's, I didn't come into this manipulative environment and have to learn how to navigate that as a child for my own survival. And some people do grow up in those kind of environments. And that's what I meant earlier by saying, as I read this and really got into the psychology and think about my own childhood, that's when I realized, yeah, I just can't, I couldn't relate to someone that grew up different than me in that way. And that's not to say I'm better or worse than them. It made me realize this is where as adults, we can come into conflict with other adults because of upbringing, you know, childhood experiences like this.
Yeah, I mean, I think that what stood out to me in this was that it's a lot of times things that feel harmless in the moment, but your kid's always watching, you know? So like the example that they gave, like, hey, if you don't come on now, hey, we're trying to leave the mall right now. If we don't come with me now, I'm leaving you here. And you think that, hey, I'm just showing them that I'm serious about this and that, but they know, either they know I won't leave them or, you know, like, that's like, I can't leave a 5-year-old at the mall, so to speak, or something. But as the parent, you rationalize it in various ways by saying something like that. But the kid is observing that as, again, the kid understands that, hey, they're trying to get me to do something that they want me to do that I don't want to do. And so this is the way, this is how you do this. So the kid can learn how to, therefore, how to interact with other people with that. So I think that part makes a lot of sense. To me, what this is really a call for discipline amongst the parents. Because in my own experience, what I know with my kids is that a lot of times for me, it's the things I don't say that where I can either catch myself or I just know I don't want to go there. And it's along the lines you said, I don't want to throw out things that I'm not willing to follow through on. You know, it's not flippant. It's not like, hey, I'm going to, if you do this, I'm going to do this. Or like, I'm careful with that. If there's not going to be a big consequence, then I work on something else. Maybe I don't use a stick. Maybe I use a carrot, you know, like but I'm careful about the ways I try to compel them to do stuff, which is not easy because when you're a parent, if your kids are young, if your kids are old, it can grate on you. The young kids have ways to grate on you. The older kids have ways to grate on you. But dealing with being the authority figure is difficult. It's just difficult. It's not something that's easy. You're stressed about your life in general also. And so there's a discipline that's involved that if you want to take the shortcut with a lot of these things as far as how to get your kids to do stuff or what, you know, and then you talked about the other thing, how your kids see you navigating through. If you want to take those shortcuts in front of your kids, then you are teaching them at all times, you know? And so that to me is really the takeaway is that you have to be to the best of your ability in the moment, cognizant of the fact that you're teaching them at all times. And those shortcuts, if you show them to use those shortcuts, then they're going to be more inclined to use those shortcuts, understanding that that's the way to be. The real tricky part here is that may be the way you learned from the way you were raised, you know? And so if you were raised in a way that was more conscious, then maybe you have a leg up on that. But even if you weren't, it's something that you have to keep in mind at all times is really just the takeaway I have from this.
Yeah. And I think, you know, that's a good example because what did I say earlier, right? I was raised a certain way in my household that I trusted my mom to be serious when she was, you know, like you said, if she was going to leave me at the mall, she said that. That's why I would run and chase her. Like, okay, I know my mom's going to leave me at this mall, you know? And look, maybe the reality was, and that's why I behaved this way, right? Maybe she really wouldn't leave me in the mall, just like I wouldn't leave a 5-year-old kid in the mall. But what I do is I go around the corner, make him think I left. You know what I mean? Like I'll play that game and say, look, all right, you're going to stay here and have a tantrum. I'll see you later. And yeah, I might go around the corner, be able to look and make sure the kid's okay, right? But the kid will eventually start coming the direction that I went, right? And what it is really just teaching the child to trust that the authority, when the word is given, that it's going to be delivered. And I think if you create a different environment, then a child will grow up, like you said, either thinking that this is how you deal with people through manipulation and you know, this kind of give and take. I think another example, though, which is interesting, James, and I think I'll start finishing my thoughts on this here, is we have the direct thing, like the parents in our relationship with kids, but then you also have the outside world. And as a parent, sometimes you can't control certain things in the environment, but you can also control how you teach your kids about it. And I'm thinking about things like religion. And this is not to pick on any religion. It could be a church, mosque, synagogue. But a lot of times the person or there's a very hierarchical environment in there. And there's sometimes things that go on where people either can take things as a lie or misdirection, right? Like a kid could say, okay, well, the religious, you know, the person on the stage keeps telling us that we got to help poor people. But then when we always drive by these poor people, we never help them, right? So there's a contradiction there, and how the parent responds to that's very important.
The religion piece is
something,
but the religion piece is interesting to me. And again, not to pick on religions, but in a sense, I wonder sometimes if religions kind of train people to lie to their kids about certain things, or to kind of be disingenuous sometimes. You know, like you said, there are holidays that may involve deceptions that you grow up. And is that really serving the kid or is that not? I'm not saying it's bad or I'm not saying it's good. I take note of that. It's like, well, hold up. What benefit are you providing the kid really by that? And are you harming them at all? I know for me, for example, one of the things, and I don't know if this was good or bad, but what I would always do anytime, and my daughter actually picked up on it later, you know, but whenever they would ask me questions that I did not want to tell them the answer to, I would start asking questions back to them. And so I would, and maybe I'm a lawyer, so it's just kind of, so I would just start saying, oh, well, why do you ask that? Well, what makes you think that, you know, or what, so I would never answer the question. So I would never say something.
That's you being a lawyer.
But I would just kind of play it off. That'd be my, me being a parent. And so I was like, okay, so I would always, and then, like I said, my daughter at one point realized, like, you know, you never answered that question. You would always just, I'm like, yes, that is correct.
That is like exactly, I say, what I would say. That your profession is one of two things. You're either a rabbi or a lawyer when you start asking so many questions back to somebody. And so for you, sir, I'll say you're an attorney.
But my point, though, is just that kind of the positions that we either have in life or that we find are in a lot of times can influence how we deal with this type of stuff. Like, just if you're in a position where things are very black and white, like, okay, law enforcement, hey, this is either somebody broke the law or they didn't, then that may be how you want to convey things. And so then a child may grow up thinking that things are very black and white and not very nuanced. And again, I'm not saying this in any way as a judgment. It's just kind of sometimes we bring our own kind of way that we order the world into these interactions with our kids. And so to me, it's interesting to see this because it's like, okay, you're forming someone else's impression. You know, I think of a Simpsons joke, you know, where Homer talks about how, you know, it's great to have kids. You get to give them all your prejudices. Yeah, I mean, it was a joke, awesome. But it was like, yeah, that's but so, but I know we want to wrap up, man. I'll go ahead and give you something funny. Else before we get out of here.
Nah, man, that's it.
Oh, yeah.
I'm just going to keep being honest with my kids where appropriate.
Well, now my question was going to be, so after seeing this, would you do anything different? You know, you still got to take one more through high school.
Nah, I mean, I've that's why I said for me, no, because I grew up, I mean, look, there's obviously, on a serious note, right? There's, you know, there's different layers and levels when kids are ready for things, right? We're not going to talk to a 5-year-old kids about sex or certain things. And those conversations, by the time a kid's 15, you might be engaging in some of that as a parent.
But hold on. You raise a good point there because it's like, okay, so therefore then if they ask you where kids come from, where babies come from, then that creates this kind of dilemma, so to speak. You know, like,
yeah, but you can say mommy and daddy or you can say the stork, right? Like there's ways to.
But that's the decision.
Like you said, No, you're right.
Let me give you another example because in that scenario for me, what I did was I would always draw the analogy of like, hey, well, we're animals, we're mammals, you know? So I like, oh, like, you know, like with dogs or with whatever. So I would use animals as an example, like, oh, it's the same kind. We're the same kind of like, that's how we do it versus like plants, you know, like, oh, plants, so you know, they drop the seed or.
Go ahead. So when your kid grows up to be a furry, then now I got it on fucking recording why this happened.
I called
the
concept here. We're talking conceptual.
Department of Children and Families. That's what it is.
Hey, Mister. Hey, you talking about me, Mister? I'm gonna tip around the corner with my kid at the mall.
No, so that's what I was gonna joke and say. So no, but let's finish on this. Is a funny joke. That is true. Doing things like drinking and drugs. How do you deal with that when you're a parent, right?
Yeah.
Now, drinking is easy because there's a law. And so you can be sitting there, I'll be drinking bourbon in front of my 10-year-old kid. You can't do this because the law says you can't, and I can. But I'll tell you, the best thing that ever happened to me was when they legalized marijuana in the state for medical purposes, and I got a card. Because, you know, then I didn't have to go sneak out back. I sat my youngest kid at the time was 12. And I, because with my older two kids, that was a bit of an issue. Like, okay, what do I say? You know, one day when they were young and they were going into, let's say, high school, I knew in my head, one day these kids are going to smell some weed at some house party.
Yeah. The smell is, they're going to know being able to not be in the presence won't work anymore.
Yeah. And so, but then once the medical card was there, I remember I just sat my 12, my son was, I think, 12 or 11 at the time. I just sat him down and showed him the card. And I just said, look, man, here, this is what I do. The doctor prescribed it. I didn't have to go into big explanation. And I just told him, I said, just like the whiskey under the cupboard, you can't touch it. You can't do this until you're older and as if a doctor's prescribed it. And that's it. And it made my life easy. I don't lie to him, nothing. I go out back and smoke when I want. And he doesn't care. So in a sense, that's an example, I think, for a lot of parents as relates to those kind of substances, because most people do drink a little bit. Some people do smoke weed and all that. I'm going to talk about legal stuff, obviously.
Recorded, you mean? As you're being recorded.
Hey, man, I'll do a blood test right now. And
hey, man, I have no accusations. That was mighty convenient.
Are in there too. Yeah, so, we are on a recorded line, so I want to make sure I'm very clear about not trying to introduce illegal things to children, right?
Well, but
so,
your overriding point is very interesting, that when society created this prohibition, because this goes in kind of like a prohibition mindset, when you create a prohibition which criminalizes everything, then that discussion is much harder than it's like, okay, no, a responsible adult can do this versus a kid. You know, like if someone's 16 and it's like, well, if you're not allowed to do this either, then why am I not allowed to do this? You know, you can't create that kind of time distinction. Like, hey, your brain is still developing. Yeah, like it's like, no. The change in law actually allowed you to be a better parent in that sense, where you can explain and give reasons why, hey, yeah, you can't do this. You know, people that are young, it's worse for them or whatever.
I'm going to send this now to the state legislature. I'm going to say, hey, let's legalize everything. Listen to this. It's going to make us all better parents.
As we say this on the recorded line. But go ahead.
Now, as I said, I'll send it to the state legislature. Let's see how they do. It's the Speaker of the House. But just to finish up, this is interesting, James, because we did a show just recently on the American Revolution. And on a serious note, one of the discussion and questions was about how do you look at historical figures and if they're 100% pure or not, and if like a hero, and if they got these flaws, can they still be a hero? And I think this conversation is interesting because it's talking about like our parents. You know, we all as kids look at our parents like they're our heroes. And then as we get older, sometimes we get disappointed that they're actually not. They're human beings that they're trying just like we are. And sometimes
and how
they're
do we
flawed,
deal with that basically once we understand that our parents weren't perfect and weren't, can they still be our heroes if we see
correct,
their
and
imperfections?
We still love them. Yeah.
And that's probably part of the job when you're raising the kid, if you can do it, is to make sure that they understand that you're not perfect, but being perfect isn't what the standard is, so to speak. You know, like you can still be aspirational and not be perfect. You know, find something else to be. I always try hard. I never give up. You know, like there's other things that you can kind of hang your hat on, as opposed to I'm the monotheistic God of your life, and I'm perfect, and you do exactly.
That's not the right way to be a parent. I got to do this all over. No, but then the last thing I'll say is, and it's interesting too, honestly, because as human beings, as parents, we evolve as we age as well. So I see that in my
journey.
You've
talked about that. Yeah.
I've got an interesting thing where, you know, between my oldest and youngest kid is 17 years. And so, like, I was a kid in the first go around. I'm in my 20s. And here I am now I'm 47 with the youngest kid's 14. So I've had this conversation with my 27-year-old son about how different I am as a human being at when his little brother's 14 than when he was 14.
Yeah,
so I was in my early 30s when he was in my early.
Yeah, you've talked about this like a lot. You've talked about
And yeah, so I'm way more calm. I've already been a parent already. Like I don't, you know, now I'm older too. I got lower T, seriously. Like, you know what I mean? Like, when I'm in my 20s or 30s, man, I was trying to come out here, you know, like raising hell when I come home if I had a bad day at work or something. Now I would come home and like, yeah, whatever, you know. And so the kids also are going to respond to that differently and grow up different because of that. And I'm the same guy. You see what I'm saying?
So, yeah. No, that's interesting. Yeah. So yeah, I mean, I just... As you know, like the stage in life that you are as a parent is going to influence a lot of these things as well. So yeah, man, it's
right.
I mean, but luckily for all of us, you know, raising kids is not a exercise in perfection, or else human beings have been gone a long time ago. You know, so it's really, I think for me, what this is about is just making sure there's some level of intentionality about this and knowledge, you know, just kind of what you say, what you do, you know, they're always watching, so to speak, but then just being intentional about. You're not going to get everything, but if there's certain things, certain values, certain mindsets you do want to instill, you have to be intentional about how you interact with them and then how you interact around them or how you act around them as well. You know, so to me, that really is the big takeaway here. So, but I think we can wrap from there. We appreciate everybody for joining us on this episode of Call Like I See It. Subscribe to the podcast, rate it, review it, tell us what you think, send it to a friend. Until next time, I'm James Keys.
I'm Tunde Lamana.
All right, we'll talk soon.